Blog Talk Radio.
Good day, everyone. Welcome to the Neil and Kristen Baker Psychic Hour. Good day is a better introduction to the show because we have callers from so many different areas. It's all different times of day and evening. So I guess I could say good night as well. But anyway, here we are on the air Wednesday. It's 9 a.m. Pacific where we are. And we're here. 914-338-0164 is the call-in number. Please do call us. We've got someone listening in the queue, and right now we don't have anyone waiting to speak with us, so we're going to have a conversation, I guess, Neil. I want to invite our callers and listeners again, as we always do, to follow us on Facebook and on Twitter. Hopefully those listening back that haven't, you know, those listening to the archives that haven't reached out, sent a friend request, followed us, liked our pages, will do so because it really does help to support us.
Yeah, and it would seem to make sense. People being shut in and isolated, one of the
what better to do than to follow Neil and Kristen?
Listen to the Neil and Kristen Baker Psychic Hour.
That's right.
Well,
and all of
you know, they're. It's the times have changed because if this had happened, this same kind of thing has happened before with the influenza and things like that. But let's say this happened 25 years ago. We wouldn't have had access as we do today to the internet and connecting and Facebook and
Twitter and what are all the other social media sites that connect us to one another, though I have heard rumors that the internet is going to be shut down temporarily. Some people are afraid the internet's going to go down for a while.
Well, I don't think so. I mean, there's no reason for it.
Yeah, well,
I mean, it's only going to invoke people to go outside again. It doesn't make sense.
No, I know.
They
are coming from places.
Yeah.
Yes, they are.
Well, maybe the invaders from Mars will land too.
Well,
but,
they already have. Maybe
yeah.
That's us. No, we're from we're not from the solar system, actually. Our planet's outside of the solar system.
Yeah. But, you know, and I was, it's interesting because I was reading in the paper where people are starting to, you know, they're easing the isolation.
Where,
by
really?
Grouping together.
Oh.
Like friends, four
oh,
friends will group together one place and just live in one home now. They're kind of having this small tribal.
Like communal.
Living thing. It's interesting because I wrote a book about this probably, 1982, about this very thing happening where people are enclosed in their environment.
Out the zero room.
In that they form people form tribal communities. Of course, they're locked in a mental hospital, but still
right.
we're all sort of mentally deranged in some respect. But
especially you.
Yeah. But the idea that we are isolated. And what do we do with that isolation? The general theory about isolation, whether you're John from Revelation or Thomas More or or for that matter,
or any
Martin
random
Luther King or anybody,
or you know,
in prison.
Right, or not only that, but you know, if you're someone who lives in isolation, like a cloistered nun, for example, and it's not, you know, a famous icon from history. I mean, there is isolation on different levels.
On all levels, solitary confinement. I mean, it's all levels. But the essence of isolation comes down to one common denominator, and that is know thyself. If you know yourself, and you are of stable mind and body, I guess you don't have to be, but better if you are, there's never truly the idea that you may be in essence alone, but you're not alone if you're preoccupied with your mind, if you meditate, if you have a connection to God or some creator, spirits, angels, if you utilize your brain to exercise, like writing or journal, painting, anything, composing, whatever it may be that one does to keep their creative essence alive. And creative essence can also be in the form of dialogue. So even though we can still dialogue, that's obvious. We can dialogue with one another. But the idea that we are in dialogue with ourselves constantly, our brains are running a constant dialogue. And we forget the fact that we are always in isolation. When I walk into a store and I hear people's thoughts going on for that space and time when I preoccupy myself with listening to people thinking, there's constant conversation going on. Everyone's dialoguing with themselves. Whether it's like, oh, I wonder what aisle the soup is on, or I got to get back home because I've got something cooking on the stove.
Or if they're planning some terrible crime.
Yeah, I've come across
I'm sure
too.
You have.
But
and
I'm
we
not
just
Batman.
I don't know if I wasn't paying attention to the switchboard because I was so engaged in what you were saying, but we did, and then they dropped. So unfortunately, the caller from 813, if you are still listening, come back on, we'll take your call, but go ahead.
Sorry. The idea, you know, this has been aggravated by the sense that we're in forced confinement, and there's this fear. This legitimate fear about the coronavirus accelerating, and even Trump, who was in great denial about it, is forewarning
supposedly in great denial.
100,000 deaths
who knows?
Coming up.
Who knows?
Who can be marked?
With his, I don't know. You know, if it's just an act, his denial in the beginning. Because anyway, I don't want to get into the whole politics of all this. But yes, I mean, there is a legitimate fear people have about getting sick. But I think it's important also, just on a side note, to remain balanced. To remember to question authority and be moderate in your measures to protect yourself. Don't go overboard, because I don't think that's necessary either. And I think people are going to extremes in many situations. And I just don't think it's necessary.
Well, no, it isn't to that extent. But, you know, this has also opened up a whole new vocabulary.
I thought you were going to say vernacular, which would have been the same anyway. But anyway, I don't know. For some reason, I thought you were going to say vernacular.
Well, vocabulary is more
a little different.
But
in any case, it would have fit.
Now we have the term coronavirus coups, which is authoritarian leaders or.
You mean coup, French.
Yeah, but
C-O-U-P. But not kooks, not like we're cooped
not
up. Coup.
C-O-O-P.
C-O-U-P-S. Coup.
General term. And so we're creating these new words, and words sometimes can come out of crisis, and the words are all available to us. We're just now combining them into new terminology, but we're not I mean, some of us are probably inventing new words, like the virus 19. It's not like it's a kind of a combination of different assemblage of words, but we've got new words coming out, and people are inventing new forms of entertainment with the rap songs about the coronavirus.
Yeah, and there's been some parodies, others better than some. Somehow, actually, they had a family on the internet. I mean, not on the internet, on World News Tonight last night. And then a friend sent the parody to me that the family did, but it wasn't particularly well done, in my opinion. But, you know, it was cute because the kids were involved, and it was like, I don't know, something from, I think it was from Les Miserables or something. And they all did harmonies, but it was just not in tune. And anyway, but there's been some funny ones. Chris Mann is one I would suggest looking up. His, you know, he's a good singer.
Well, you know, and then I also read where a couple of doctors are isolating themselves in one particular doctor's home because they don't want to bring anything home to their family. So they're camping out together. And there are people who are forming PACs.
P-A-C-T. PACT.
They make a PACT.
What kind of
live together. They're from diverse backgrounds, and they're living together as a commune, as a small commune, and they do everything together. And so we're redefining what isolation is, and we are redefining what survival is, and what human interaction and typical communication is. I mean, now we're impacted with the idea that the elbow knock is now the common form of union.
Of greeting rather than a handshake because of the passing of germs. Yeah, they say to sneeze into your elbow. That's been a long, you know, standing recommendation. But
yeah. I mean,
tried to push it in this
Nothing is really new. What is new or what is old is new again. But the idea that we're changing our behavior and that there is a current attitude that people are going to die.
Right.
In fact, people are going to die anyway.
But, you know, it's true. And they're saying that the numbers of coronavirus are rising, but it's questionable whether they can really test for the strain. And there's so many different strains of coronavirus. SARS, which was a big problem. This is actually a SARS type, COVID-19 is classified as a SARS virus, but there was a SARS virus. How many years ago was that when SARS, the original SARS? But anyway, I forgot what my point is, but what they're saying now is possibly that they're going to be, now I know Riverside County, which is near us, is strongly suggesting that you, if you go out into public, that you wear a mask. So whether this is going to become mandated or not is in question for, you know, whether it's, you know, a short period of time or a long period of time, but while this virus is still a threat, it's certain communities, counties are going to start to make it a law that you wear a mask when you go out. It remains to be seen, but we've been into the latest trip to our supermarket. Many people were shopping were wearing masks and gloves. So being the one or two people in the store that aren't covering their mouths and hands with gloves and masks might, you know, make those two an outcast in that environment because people are really, really paranoid. They're really paranoid.
The greatest phenomena of all is that it's become worldwide. So different nations and countries are dealing with it. I mean, there's a similar way to deal with it in terms of isolation, but authoritative countries and totalitarian countries under dictatorships, they've been under mandated orders anyways throughout their existence. We've kind of become a locked-in security-wise community in the United States. And we're now under some form of martial content, martial law, that we can actually be penalized for if we break it.
Right, and they're fining people in some states for not following the guidelines to stay 6 feet away from others or whatever.
Yeah.
If you gather in more groups of more than two now, it's an infraction that they can put you in jail for a fine. What is going on with her? We have a constantly meowing cat through this whole show. Olive, yeah. Calm down.
So, and we're somewhat in an area where the process of how we are going to be existing from this point onward, doctors have been impacted with waking up in the morning, deciding who's going to live and who's going to die because there's a lack of ventilators. And people who have already lost their companions due to this are now experiencing a different kind of dramatic impact on their psyche. Because this thing is, we can't grasp it, we can't fight it. There's nothing we can do but run from it and isolate ourselves. So we've kind of gone into hiding. In another sense, metaphorically speaking, it's like the persecution of peoples, the Jews hiding from the Nazis, the slaves hiding from the Southerners and during the Civil War period and during slavery times, people going into hiding constantly. We're a world in hiding right now. And the consequences of going out is almost similar to the consequences of being shot. We seem to take our chances. Whether this is highly dramatized or exaggerated, but there's still a level of authenticity and realism going on because we are now living on siege. We are comprised of a ceiling of threat. We are under that composition. And so it's changing our tone. Now, the ultimate outlook, psychically speaking, is when is this going to end? How is it going to impact us? Well, I think like anything, we'll get past
extinct.
It.
No.
things will kind of normalize. And, you know, when you talk to the kids growing up today about the Great Depression or the Dust Bowl or World War II, God, some people don't even know what that means anymore because of the lack of education. And that brings up another thing. It's a great tragedy that because the schools have shut down, that kids think it's a big, a lot of kids.
But
think it's just a big Little Rascals recess.
Time. You are taking my point that I was just going to mention, actually. It's true, and there was an article in the Times that you, me, and I looked at it on my app, and it talked about, you know, the disparity in income level and the accessibility of education, because apparently many of the students in the LA Unified School Districts are supposed to be given computers and free internet service, which many don't have because they come from low-income families. So they're saying, you know, if you're wealthy, you're much more likely to be able to succeed and move forward in your schoolwork and so on and so forth. However, I know for a fact that there are many middle-class families that are, you know, not taking schoolwork and progressing seriously, and it is a big recess for kids. And what I think the article in the Times mentioned is that what these kids are being taught is that in crisis you take a break, you relax. That's how you handle crisis. And so that is a lesson for young impressionable minds is not a positive one going forward, because when they become adults, of course, that could be, you know, a big crisis.
Yeah.
And when a crisis hits them, how are they going to handle this?
I don't know how the teachers in the upper grades are going to be dealing with with their agenda of teaching.
Well,
that they have to, they have a certain program, and the kids aren't going to be prepared to follow it because they're going to have to do catch up work.
I got to tell you something. I have a girlfriend who teaches at a school for at risk youth, and they have what's called, I can't remember what the program is, but it's trauma informed based learning or something like that. So they either give you an A, B, or an I grade. A is you did great, B is you got some of it, and I is you didn't pass, but you can make up the work whenever. So there's not a formal grading system because these boys are come from these homes that are, you know, violent gang families, et cetera, and they've come to the school and live there. Well, they've gone home now because schools are closed. And she told me that out of 30 students in her class, only two have checked in for online work, and they have, you know, computers and internet access. They've been supplied with that by the school. And there's this big debate at her school by the teachers, what is going to happen with these students because they're going to be ill prepared. I said, listen, you guys have to set a standard right now and say, if you do not pass, you don't get to graduate or you don't get to move forward because that and
yeah, the administration
is saying, well, if you're a great teacher, then this wouldn't be happening. You're not a good enough teacher. The kids would be engaged if you're a great teacher.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's horrible.
Yeah, it would be, you know, appropriate to this day if suddenly all the world leaders and all the organizations said April Fool's, this was nothing but a test.
Well, this is April Fool's Day, unfortunately.
Yeah.
I'm not in the mood for jokes. Usually I'm really
it would be the most colossal April Fool's joke.
Yeah,
this is all nothing but a practical joke.
But in you're going to say something.
In reality speaking, I think, in a future tense, I don't think this is going to greatly affect our
existence for
generations. I think it might be, we'll learn from it, we'll protect ourselves. There's always some kind of existential threat. Once this subsides, Korea might start throwing missiles again, North Korea. China, I mean, there's always going to be some kind of threat.
Well,
we have pollution, we have climate change, we have floods, we have tornadoes.
Right. I mean, Katrina has been something that has been mentioned, Hurricane Katrina, in comparison to this. But of course, this is worldwide, not just affecting a sector of the United States. But there is an impact that this is going to have on some level, in some lasting way, I think. And I also think that when, you know, right now we are being stripped somewhat of our basic rights. People aren't allowed to operate their businesses. Very interesting. In Los Angeles, police are actually cracking down on non-essential businesses, and they're shutting off their power, water, if they are operating. And on the same token, President Trump yesterday ruled that gun businesses, people that sell guns, are essential to society right now. So, I mean, you know, some people can't practice free enterprise, and it would be debatable whether they're essential or not, even though they've been classified as non-essential. But Trump has here ruled that, you know, if you have a gun shop, that's essential. I mean, it just seems like a real...
This process of reification where we alter the true meaning of whatever we say is meaningful, whatever we want to make the truth is the truth. We reify. We tend to select what the truth is, make it subjectively speaking, a standard of truth, and we start to define, well, what is essential, what is vital, what is important, and we start to apply those rules. But it's also in the category and the cousin to propaganda and thought control, and
definitely
and things like that.
Definitely.
You know, there are those that will be people who are in denial or people who are defiant according to this dilemma that we're in, this pandemic that we're in. They have a right to feel that way. I mean, it doesn't, the reality of what is going on, there's always a reality, but how we adjust to certain realities is also in the attitude of denial. Listen, when we walk down the street and we see homeless people that we don't even bother to think what their level of survival is like, where they're going to sleep, how they're going to eat, where they're just living on the street. And not all of them are drug addicts or prostitutes or criminals. There are legitimate people living on the street. And we, all of us, we're all guilty of this to some degree. Not all of us, but we deny the fact that we can look the other way and not see it. Just because this has hit us, this has woke us up about the needs of what it means to survive and to be alive. But we have become so immune to other kinds of diseases and viruses, such as homelessness and persecution and bullying and things like this. We've become immune to all kinds of national disasters and murders and things like this. We tend to shut out, even when we're complacent, even when we're living our normal, harmonious lives, we tend to shut out reality until it hits us in the face. And there was an old saying, you know, first they persecuted them, and then they persecuted them, and then they did this, and now they're coming after you. Well, ultimately, now every human being is faced with the idea that no one is immune to a quote, a virus, that we're all under the canopy of some kind of existential or realistic threat. And it's time that we all wake up and start to understand that and appreciate that. And the thing about this virus is it doesn't care who you are, what you're, this isn't, you know, a black disease or a some kind of.
Well, they do say that certain people, there are people that are more immune to it actually than others. Blood types, like O positive, if you have O positive, then you're more likely to be safe. If you're male, you're more likely to suffer from it than if you're female. So, I mean,
there's variations on that. Now the younger people are getting it, and it can get into anyone's system if you're vulnerable. But the idea that even if you are immune to it, you can be potentially
a carrier
by being a carrier.
Yeah.
So we live on a fragile planet, and we as human beings living on that planet are fragile too. We're not invincible. And even though we tend to think optimistically, or some of us tend to fight any kind of peril or adverse condition that might otherwise affect us, we're all conditioned under the notion that death is inevitable, and nobody really knows when it's going to hit us. So to me, it's dramatic in the placement of how it's affecting us on a daily basis, and the potential of the risk of death is much higher now, and we haven't conquered the solution. It doesn't take itself away from the fact that we've always been living under
this condition. I have to interject here because you're much more likely to die in a car accident than you are to die of the coronavirus, this strain of the coronavirus. You're much more likely to die of influenza than you're going to, you know, than you're going to.
Yeah,
than
more
the coronavirus.
Deaths,
are we going to stop? So the question is, are we going to stop driving because it's a risk to be in a car? I mean,
yeah.
It's
they
ridiculous.
Say how many people died in traffic accidents this week? No one is allowed to drive a car now.
Right. I mean, you have to.
And you can kill
really,
others by doing so.
Right. So, you know, there has to be a balance, and obviously, there right now we're in a time of great imbalance when it comes to the rules and regulations that have been placed upon us because of this threat, supposed threat, which, you know, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I don't know anyone who has coronavirus. Have you met anyone yet?
No.
No.
But so.
And I know that they're attributing I know that they're attributing people's deaths to coronavirus. There's a Milwaukee police officer that's saying he died of coronavirus, or is a police chief. And the daughter comments, said, this is not how he died. He had many different health problems. This is not how he died. He did not have coronavirus, and it's not true. So, I mean, there's propaganda going on for sure in this. Yes, I believe this is a virus. It exists, it's real, and it is a threat, and people are becoming sick from it. But I think that we need to use common sense as well.
We do, and the reporting news is not an exact science, and neither is the definition of what this virus is an exact science. We don't really understand it yet. I do know one thing that I'm pleased about, if it's true, that China is now outlawing any kind of wildlife, killing of wildlife for the use of human consumption in the marketplace.
Well, that's great.
So
that's good.
That is good news, and I think that's important.
But I mean, you know, back on the topic real quickly of children being out of school, like they've canceled school in California for the remainder of the year. So essentially kids are going to be out until I believe it's August, late August here. So that's several months being out of school, and definitely kids are not following parents are not following guidelines of social distancing with kids. So if this is really a threat, these kids could be carriers and passing it on to the whole neighborhood.
I think the new logo for the children of school today, the new poster should be Tom Sawyer and Huckleberry Finn smoking corn pipes. That's the new student of our future generation. It's going to be exciting to see the brilliant minds coming out of this that will tell us how to go fishing and run through caves. I mean, I think if I was a kid, I would be elated that I was out of school.
Me too, definitely.
But I was kind of an oddball because I would spend my summer vacations as a kid writing books and stuff. But I had a good sense of play too. I loved playing. But this is a great time to be playing. I mean, I kind of envy, as much as I find it disgusting, I kind of envy the fact that these kids are having a ball. You know, a summer's lasting a year long. And
well,
playing some of them are doing it.
Some of
teaching.
Them. But as I was telling you, I was discussing with a friend the situation with kids, and she's a teacher, and she was saying, you know, the thing is that schools raise your kids. So a lot of these parents are not equipped to take over the role of having their children home for this extended period of time because they're in school all day and, you know, they don't know how to homeschool, though there are people that are teachers that are letting their kids run around. So who knows?
You know, I mean, to me, I think that if I were a parent, I'd be teaching a child about survival and how to be creative and keeping a journal and
providing
assignments,
right? Providing them structure. I think structure is very important. Not giving them the choice of, well, what do you feel like doing, honey?
Yeah.
You know that the hours that they're supposed to be in school should be devoted to a structured activities that are related to process. You know, the process of education and growing the mind.
You know, maybe tabulate. Get a kid a globe. And teach a kid how to understand where to look for countries and nations and small places on the map and give them tests daily. Let them have a telescope to look at the stars at night. Give them books to read and ask them to keep, like we said, a personal diary or a narration of some sorts. Learn how to be creative with mathematics.
Learn an instrument or practice their instrument that they are already playing.
Yeah, there's so many.
There's a lot of different things.
There's so many. Yeah.
There's a lot of different things to do.
So now, in pertaining to our show, what psychically speaking, how do we? And here we're impacted by the fact that there's no callers, and we're trying to.
Which is surprising because people are off work. I mean, people are home.
You'd think there'd be a lot of people calling and there'd be a lot of panic going on. I don't know how the other shows are doing, but this attitude of total isolation, I mean, we have gotten a lot of calls from people who are who are afraid and frightened, and so we've been bitten
and frustrated, and also frustrated because of the way that they are being personally impacted by the the restrictions that are now being
forced. We're getting a lot of that. I don't know why the radio show is a little bit vacant of callers, but that doesn't mean that people are in their own crisis, because we do interact with people.
Maybe they're all on ventilators.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Like I was saying, to me, it was strange when back in the 80s, the 70s and 80s, 1970s through 1980s, when I was seeing this stuff and bothering to
record it in
writing novels
written form
around it. It hadn't happened yet. And now we're here in time, 2020, almost 40 years later, and we have, or sometimes over 40 years, and we're now caught up with this vision, at least on a personal level. We are in a vision of a crisis that I had foreseen. Not that that's an outstanding thing. It has nothing to do with that. But the idea is, where are we going from here? And what is the future going to be like for us? And how is this going to impact and change us? Do we have a caller?
Well, we have she's just been listening, but now she's raising her hand. Jennifer, what's up?
Hello, I'm not on a ventilator.
No. I'm glad. You seem to be breathing fine.
Thanks.
Are you on a calculator?
I got a job offer in this last year. I just wanted you to know. It's not like I have any questions, but it's strange that on a Sunday I got an offer letter for a job that I actually want. So, and I start on the 14th of April.
Congratulations. That's really great. But wait, what kind of job is it? I mean, I don't know what the limitations are really specific to Canada as far as work. So is this an, quote, essential position?
It's a government position. It's immigration. I used to work at it before, but I was only on contract, so they asked me to come back. So
that's great.
Yeah. So I thought I'd share some good news stories. And, with my time, I taught my kids how to write in cursive. They've been working out and doing their homework every day. So, things have been okay here.
That's good. I don't know what is going on in Canada specifically that differs from what's happening in the United States. But are you guys essentially on lockdown? Most of us are. I mean, it's lockdown is probably too extreme a classification for what we're on, but it's a strong stay-at-home recommendation.
Well,
very strong.
I was quarantined, so I was strictly because I went to Florida for a period of time.
Oh.
So they put me on quarantine, which is up on my birthday on Friday.
That's right.
Happy birthday to me.
I'm sorry.
So,
your birthday's coming up. Happy birthday.
Yeah, my birthday's Friday. And then, but I'm very close to Detroit. Like, I can see Detroit from my driveway. So they are on, it's like they're not on lockdown. People are just going about their lives. And look at the death toll that they have. It's crazy.
Yeah.
I'm not up to date on Detroit specifically, the death toll there due to this.
The top three cities right now are New Orleans, Detroit, and New York City.
I know New York was high, and I know it's high here in LA, supposedly, and Louisiana, I've heard, but I didn't know Detroit. For some reason, that escaped me.
Yeah, well, I'm close to it, so I hear all the news, but those are the top three that they're talking about. But I think that what they're relating it to is that it's because of the poverty, but I don't necessarily think that, I don't see how poverty would relate to staying in your home. I'm not quite sure.
In terms of contracting the illness, I mean, I would imagine that, I don't know.
Well, usually in poverty, you're living in a tight area
with a lot of people.
You don't have the
access to medical care.
Medical care, and so people who are living in poverty, and the same thing's going on in India, where there's so many poor people.
Calcutta.
Yeah. that when you're crowded together in slum conditions or whatever, they're trying to release more prisoners from the jail. So
they're doing they're even doing that here.
I mean, the people in poverty, I mean, the karma is so terrible because they've got enough problems to deal with. And then when something like this hits and they're more exposed to the dangers. But again, you know, it probably, I mean, even when you look at Detroit, I think of the car industry now,
which is
President Trump is trying to ease the regulations on emissions and things like this. But there's a great debate, too, about what's going to happen with the car industry.
Well, the car industry, I mean, Detroit's already been hit with the fact that the factories have moved overseas.
Yeah.
I mean, it's very the poverty level there is largely because of the fact that they're the source of income, main source of income has been removed. The reason I laughed, Jennifer, about India, which I wasn't laughing about India, is that earlier a neighbor walked by and Neil thought, the neighbor asked when we were going to Calcutta. And so Neil was saying, how would you think we were going to this? We don't travel that far. We would never go there. But the neighbor actually asked, is your cat out?
Oh, easy mistake.
So that's why I started laughing.
I said, we'd never travel that far. And he goes, what? And he was looking at me perplexed, like, you wouldn't go out in your driveway? But, you know, sometimes when I hear people talk, the words, I don't hear the exact words.
No, he doesn't.
So it happens like this.
It does.
But
it does.
But, yeah, well, Jennifer, you have a birthday coming up, so happy birthday.
She's
going to
be 50.
So that's a celebration.
Oh, I know. You should do something special because it's, you know, that's a milestone.
What am I going to do?
Well, to celebrate, of course. Celebrate.
Well, it's funny because I am intuitive in my own right. However, like back in my goal was to go to the Tiger Home opener, get a bus, ship all my friends, go over, party, whatever. And then back in my mind, I'm like, don't book that. So I didn't. And then I was going to go to a concert, go see the English Beat over in Detroit. And then I heard, don't buy those tickets. So I didn't buy the tickets. And now look.
Yeah.
Well, maybe you can have a bakery bake you a cake with cursive handwriting.
No.
Well, I found some cream cheese in my fridge, so I said to the neighbor, how about you make me a cheesecake? But okay. We're all good.
That's nice. Yeah. Well, don't go to Calcutta.
No. Well, I won't even let the cat out. How about that?
Don't do it.
Well, Jennifer, you know, while we're on the topic, and you're our only caller, what are your expectations for this year? What would you like to see happen?
Well, what I have started to do for myself personally, or the whole entire world?
For yourself, right now.
Okay, for myself personally, I have started writing this book. I thought, oh, here's the perfect time, quarantine, I'll write this book. So I wrote, instead of writing the book, because, you know, you set your intention on something, you do something completely different. I wrote the New World Order Manifesto. So I did that last Monday. So I feel like I peaked early in my quarantine, but I do want to finish this book. It does seem once I sit down and actually start writing it, the words are coming quite well. I feel like my kids are good. I'd like to see them go back to school, but not because they're driving me crazy. We're all getting along fine, knock on wood. But, you know, they like that structure. I agree. There should be some structure. I don't have that structure, but I've never had it, so I'm not surprised. But they still are doing their homework, but that's their own thing.
What is the content of this book? Can you describe
it? It's interesting that you would use those words, actually. That's piqued my interest for sure.
Which words? The New World Order Manifesto?
New World Order Manifesto, yeah.
I just thought there needs to be a new world. I thought that this, so what's, here's my feeling, and you know, you've got, everyone's entitled to their own opinion. This was, what's it called when you're in a play, but you do a dress, this is a dress rehearsal for something further down the line if we don't pass it. So,
wait, you mean, I think, what's going on now?
What's going on now, yes.
Yeah.
And I really think that people are handling it quite well. I'm quite impressed. However, there's still a lot of disparity between, you know, but the giving people are being very happy to give. And I'm someone who's a giving person, but it's hard for me to accept. But my neighbors have been, because I've been quarantined, my friends, my kids have been going out and getting groceries and doing things like that. So I've been accepting of that. So that's my lesson in this. But other people, I feel like they see it as an opportunity, either to be a, like, I feel there's a lot of people who are just stuck in that victim mentality. You're not hearing too much about it, though, in the news, but there are a lot of people still stuck in the victim mentality. So the New World Order Manifesto is talking about what an ideal world would look like. And an example of it, I didn't go into huge amounts of discussing the natural laws, like, you know, the law of reciprocity and those laws, which really resonate with me because there is natural law. You know, you do this, then this, or you emit this, this happens. It's
like
all,
karma.
And it's, yeah, like karma, but it's on a here now sort of basis, you know, in the present moment rather than, you know, past life thing. So that it basically covers those and, you know, what an ideal world would look like. And, you know, it's basically the same thing that you guys talk about, you know, having integrity, being good, and, you know, caring about the environment.
I think it's great that you're doing this and, you know, using your time constructively, especially before you go back to work, which is going to be a definite change going on in your life. But, you know, it's really kind of funny. I was dividing her karmic number by her age, and it's actually 8.3 cycles into a change. And she has, you know, her 1970 is an 8, going backwards is a 3.
8.2.
Huh?
It's 8.2.
No, it's 8.2.
Is she going to be
50? It's 8.3. I just divided.
Oh, well.
It's 8.3. And going backwards, you know, there's an 8 in the combined, in the total of the year and the sum of the year. And 3, of course, is her day. So
yeah.
It's kind of an interesting little, you know, because you're not on an exact cycle, but that's a big change that's going on, a new job, especially this permanent position, given you worked, you know, contract labor before, and now they're taking you on full time.
It's still
contract, so it's going to end?
Well, it probably won't end, but the contract technically still be end of December, but they'll just extend it, I'm sure.
Oh, okay.
So your manifesto sounds like it's more of a behavioral program about how to think and how to act in terms of a philosophy about life, appreciation of life. That's what you're doing.
Yeah.
How far are you into it?
No, I wrote 2 pages, and I didn't want to get into the natural law, because I thought, well, you know, that's all been written about, and it's all relevant, and, you know, if people want to get into it. And there have been books written about it, like, you know, A New Earth by Eckhart Tolle. You know, he did write about that, about how to change, you know, your thought processes so that you are living in the moment and you know, let go of things like pain and, you know, victimization and that sort of thing. So, you know, the wheel is out there. You know, it depends on, I just wanted to write it from my perspective. So.
Well, that's great. Yeah. I mean, there are attitudes that people have written about throughout time in terms of the utopias and how we should live under a certain dynamic of thinking that includes the humanistic aspect of existence and things like this, and utopia. So we have that kind of attitude, as opposed to some who have written about the somewhat destruction of the New World Order, like George
right.
Orwell.
That's what I was, that's where I thought she was going when she said New World Order, why I was like, interesting. But
yeah.
I mean, it's still, you know, it's still relevant. And, you know, even though it's been done, it doesn't mean that it can't be written about
it
from a new perspective.
I mean, it's even invaded our commercials. Remember the Pepsi generation? Like to make the world as one or something like that.
Like to teach the world to sing harmony.
Yeah.
Actually, with Coca-Cola.
Coca-Cola.
I mean,
you know, in that optimistic attitude where we think exclusively of the idealistic way of thinking, but then we have to manage the dichotomy of what the real aspects are in our planet. You know, people who wrote about utopia, Thomas More, or Walden by Thoreau, people who utilized a thought of how to deal with this utopian aspect of thinking when we have this mismanagement of human behavior around us. But it's nice, you know, I mean, it's nice, Jennifer, that you promote the idea of using this event and this time right now to think of the world in terms of a universal love aspect that we all respect one another. I think that's great. But in reality, when we look at the parts of existence that are not in sync with that way of thinking, and we have to not just utilize a concept of utopia, but this idea, like you were talking about, natural laws, E equals MC squared, you know, natural laws, H2O. When we have this natural process of thinking, we also have to get into the idea of how the mind is going to evolve, like Darwinism, how we're going to survive in the new era of time after we get through this chapter of existence where everybody's impacted by this virus. But the condition of the virus is really a human condition. I mean, it's peaked itself to the extent that there's animals involved, that has caused our human condition to deteriorate. But the idea that we are all under the element of human beings and how to group together on a worldly basis, I think, is going to be very challenging.
Mm-hmm. I totally agree with you.
Okay. Well, we are close to, we're about 5 seconds away from our, 13 seconds away from our 90-second warning. So I think we're going to start to wrap up, Jennifer. But
thank you for calling.
Thanks for calling, giving our show
thank
a little
you.
Bit of diversity today.
Thank you for thinking that everyone was on a respirator, and that made me crack up.
Glad. I'm glad. Well, we aim to make people laugh. On the show. So hopefully we made one person laugh today. And we are back on the air, hopefully for an audience of more than one on Friday at 9 a.m. Pacific, 12 p.m. Eastern. Some of you join us then. Bye-bye.